Hi, and welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I am your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. Today, we're going to be talking about the results of the midterm elections. Some interesting results for restaurants came out of the midterm elections, so we're going to be talking about that a little bit. We're also going to be talking about the new urbanization of restaurants. Restaurants have been returning to urban environments after a big move to the suburbs during the pandemic. So we're going to be talking about that. Let me introduce my co-hosts first, though.
I am Sam Okus, Editor-in-Chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I am Leanne Zinsmeister, Managing Editor of Nation's Restaurant News.
Well, welcome, you guys. It's so nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Holly. It's like a perfect morning for a podcast recording.
I was just saying how, like, burnt out I am just, like, by the day already.
11 a.m.
But I did have Taco Bell for breakfast. That was a good start to my day.
Starting with the good news already.
I'm supporting the breakfast industry, the QSR breakfast industry, one day at a time.
They thank you.
That's all you can do one day at a time.
I would hope so. I mean, honestly, my Crunchwrap was delicious.
Taco Bell's breakfast is fantastic. I mean, that the breakfast Crunchwrap is really tasty.
It's really good. Yeah. And their sauces, oh my God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love Taco Bell.
And to think when I met you, I don't think when I met you, you had even had Taco Bell before, right?
No, I had not.
All but a year and a half ago.
It took several years of convincing on my part to get Holly to try Taco Bell, and I created a monster single-handedly. Yeah. My bad.
That's like Leanne and I drinking peppermint mochas yesterday. That was a great day,
too. You weren't a peppermint mocha fan?
She had never had one until I bought her first one. Was it last Christmas or was it before the pandemic?
I think it was last Christmas.
I got you your first peppermint mocha. And yesterday I said, hey, I'm going to Starbucks. Do you want anything? And she said a peppermint mocha. And I've never
You've changed her. Yeah. Well done.
It was delicious. Thank you. And then we recorded a podcast about coffee. And so we recorded it over coffees. It was really quite wonderful.
It was a great conversation. That's on First Bite, Thursday's episode this week.
Yeah.
Nice plug.
I mean, I wasn't going to leave our listeners hanging there.
Highly recommend
it.
Highly
recommend restaurants.
All right. We should talk about restaurants. Let's talk about politics, Sam. Let's talk about some politics.
Our favorite subject.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, Leanne, if you want to check out for the next 5 minutes, that'd be great.
So there were some interesting results from the midterm elections. I mean, we're not even going to talk about the races. We're going to talk about some of the ballot initiatives that were happening. So DC voted to eliminate the tip credit, which is very interesting. What do you think about that, Sam?
Well, I mean, interesting, but not surprising, right? I think for a city like DC, that is a more progressive city, because the tip credit was also up in Portland, Maine, and it did not pass. So they did not eliminate the tip credit in Portland, Maine, which is, that is a progressive city, but in definitely more of a red state than DC. So I don't think necessarily surprising, but I think there is momentum here for this on a broader scale and similar to minimum wage, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the tip credit has been a hot button issue. Of course, that's a very pro worker thing to eliminate tip credit, because now the full service restaurants in particular have to pay minimum wage to their employees. They have to cover that gap and not rely on tips to be able to do that. So now the workers stand to benefit and stand to make more money. The restaurants, of course, have to pay more for labor because of this. But it's been a hot button issue. And I think that you'll start to see more and more of this. We're in a more of a pro worker environment these days. Again, minimum wages are going up. That was the other thing that happened significantly this week, was that Nebraska voted to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which is, you know, a very red state supporting a pretty progressive measure. And so I just think the winds of change, you know, are are a blow-in, as they will say, and that there's more support for higher minimum wage, for better pay to workers. We've been through a lot the last couple of years. And so I think that, you know, sympathies have moved probably more toward especially minimum wage workers, those folks who worked on the front line through the worst of the pandemic, to take care of them more. We see wealth disparities increasing. We see, you know, the gap between the haves and the have-nots very obviously widening. And so I just think that, you know, this seems to be a response from some communities to take better care of employees. Now, that's not across the board. That's not across the whole country. Again, Portland, Maine having voted against eliminating the tip credit. But also, if you look at some of the unionization efforts that were on the ballots, Tennessee voted to limit union membership requirements, which is limiting the power of unions, whereas then Illinois voted to protect collective bargaining, which again is a little bit more on the side of the worker. There was no sweeping movement toward workers and toward supporting workers through these ballots. But again, you're seeing some communities really step up and start to vote in favor of better pay, better conditions for their employees. And I think that you tend to see, you know, the more that really happens across the country, I think you'll start to see, you know, some of the folks who are lagging, some of the states and communities that are lagging are going to follow. I think that's especially true for minimum wage. I mean, look, minimum wage, you know, it's, you know, the longer you debate on the minimum wage issue, the longer inflation takes its toll, and you can stop and look at a $7 or $8 minimum wage and go, oh my God, it's been that for 10, 15 years. Like, inflation alone means you have to increase the minimum wage. So, no grand sweeping, themes in the election. I would say, of course, if you're listening to this, you already know by now that the night was a little bit of a softer result for Republicans than expected. So, you know, whatever that means for the business world, the Republicans will very likely take the House. And so we're probably going to see 2 years of stalemate when it comes to just national measures. That's just what you can expect when one party has the House or Senate and the other party has the other chambers. So those are my conclusions from election night. No sweeping measures, but definitely a movement toward supporting labor from some communities.
Well, what I thought was interesting is that the NRA released a statement about the tip credit being eliminated in DC, and they basically said voters don't understand this measure. And so they put the onus on the voters, which I thought was really interesting and a little surprising.
Aggressive.
Yeah.
it was aggressive. I was pretty surprised for the NRA's response. I mean, look, the NRA is a lobbyist group for restaurateurs. So, of course, restaurateurs want to keep the tip credit because ultimately that will mean having to pay your employees less of that, their pay coming out of your pockets. So of course the NRA supports the tip credit. That was a pretty aggressive gesture for them to say what they said and to basically blame the voter. Look, the concept of tip credit, even just what it's called, tip credit, yeah, that's confusing. You've got to kind of research that to really understand what does this mean. And you could have a whole other long conversation about tip culture. I mean, I think that's, you know, you could really start talking about whether or not tipping in general is just kind of like out of control in this country. Danny Meyer, of course, tried to get rid of tipping and he had to go back because it was just like, this is embedded in the American psyche. And so I don't think the voters are misinformed or misled necessarily. They might just be saying, you know, we just want to see the workers get more than maybe the business. Now, yes, there are implications for the business too. This could make it, does really affect the business of the restaurant, meaning that if you have a small business owner who is, you know, just a mom and pop restaurant owner, this affects their bottom line. I think that's what the NRA is trying to point out. Like, this could really affect the bottom line of your favorite corner restaurant mom and pop operation. Simultaneously, you know, again, it's really about a matter of the balance of who gets what, you know, how much of the money ends up in the pockets of the restaurant itself or in the pockets of the employee. I believe that, you know, we can solve this where it works for both sides, because I do believe that workers should be paid more, but I also believe that I also understand how much of a razor thin profit margin that the restaurants have. We've got to figure out a better way here. Honestly, some of it has to be that the customer has to be willing to pay more. At the end of the day, if you really want a restaurant to survive, you have to embrace higher prices, because restaurants cannot survive on trying to, you know, keep prices as low as customers expect. So this is a bigger conversation. NRA didn't necessarily have to come out so strongly with the statement it did, but I understand the sentimentality.
Well, that feels like enough politics talk, but Leanne, it was a lovely.
Leanne, dutifully quiet. You didn't feel like saying anything.
Anything I say, just gonna make Holly edit out later.
No, I won't. Come on. Please. You need to learn the art of walking a fine line, Leanne.
No, thank you.
I just offered a 5-minute example of how you can do that.
No, oh, because you're just so eloquent, Sam. We just all need to follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, I'm glad you finally figured that out, Holly.
Our grand poobah.
Anyway, let's get away from politics, shall we?
There we go.
That was what I was trying to do. All right, let's move on to the urbanization. Woohoo. Yes, Lillian's dancing too. Okay.
This topic gets me fired up too, but it probably won't get me in trouble if I talk about it. So
I'm going to have Holly cut it out just because.
Everyone's going to be like, what's yeah. that girl, Leanne? She used to be on the podcast. She just gets fully edited out now.
She introduced herself wrong.
She's too controversial.
She said her name in the beginning. I'm confused why she's not in the podcast. All right. Well, so restaurants they're not moving back to the city. They've already been in the cities, but they're opening these new units in cities, or they're testing out new types of units, or they are focusing on their city units again. They're seeing more money in city units. People are focusing on the city again, rather than focusing on the suburbs like they've been doing for the past few years. We've seen it in a lot of earnings calls. I just have the word urban stuck in my mind. We've seen it on a lot of Q3 earnings calls. People talking about this move back to the city. That people are going back to the offices, people are coming back out again. So what do you guys think?
I think this is a long time coming. I think it makes a lot of sense. A lot of us who live in the cities have simply not been going to the office for the last almost 3 years now. Sam and I were just talking yesterday. Like, he's out in the suburbs and goes to a co-working space like 3 or 4 times a week. And it's so easy and convenient. He just drives there, hangs out, can grab lunch or something out while he's there. Whereas I go into the office maybe once a week, and it's an hour long commute on the subway. I've got all my stuff with me. It's just not as convenient. Like, urban centers aren't as convenient as they used to be, especially for that lunch crowd, which a lot of these restaurants rely on. But after all these years, they're starting to see more of that. I know Shake Shack for a long time was struggling because they primarily are in urban centers. And so they are one of many fast casual brands that started focusing on suburbs the last couple of years, but they're starting to see a resurgence in their urban units, which again makes sense. There's one right across the street from our office. And I know I've been spending more money at Shake Shack this year than the last couple. So it's, yes, but it's overall, it's a trend. Everybody has been talking about it on their earnings calls. And I think it's a good sign for the ongoing economic recovery for restaurants. And even as the economy itself is, you know, a little bit in question, this has been a really good, encouraging sign for the restaurant industry.
Yeah, I think to Leanne's point, you know, I think you and I, Leanne, are not so different, and Holly, you probably too. I mean, we're not so different than a big chunk of the American the workers who were forced to work from home in the pandemic, which is that I go stir crazy now, right? Like, I am currently recording this sitting in my house, but yeah, to Leanne's point, I'm now trying to get about half a day, most days every week at a co-working space because I can feel like a grown-up again. I can go to an office. I can, you know, I can move around my community. And that hybrid style of work, I think, is becoming more the norm. But the point of the hybrid, even with this hybrid model of work, people are going to an office at least some right now. And, you know, if you are a restaurant and you have a location near in a central business district near an office, you only need one visit from that person per week to really make that a viable business, right? You're not banking on them being an everyday customer. And now if they're only in the office 3 days a week, then you're getting less business. You only need them one day a week to really, you know, justify your existence there. And I think that's typically what those restaurants were doing previously anyway. So, now that people are going back more to the office, they want to get out of the house, they want to work somewhere, in a physical environment, they've got to eat. And so restaurants are going to be right there waiting for them. So what we're seeing now is a lot of these companies tailoring their prototypes around this more of a, what would make more sense in an urban environment. And so, you know, Chili's and Applebee's in particular just announced these new prototypes. Chili's is doing a carryout delivery only concept. Applebee's is doing pickup windows. Panera offering their urban style format that really prioritizes off-premises orders. You're seeing these companies really rethink, okay, how can we get a smaller footprint to capitalize on urban real estate to get back into these cities where people are now going more and more into the office? It just makes sense. And there's going to be availability, right? I mean, yeah, 2 years ago when we declared the city dead, everybody fled the cities, meant you had a lot more real estate available. I mean, I know you guys see it some in New York. When we were all in Denver for Create, I was just like, there are just like so many boarded up storefronts. It just felt like ghost town in some ways in downtown Denver. I think a lot of other cities saw that. So what does that mean? Well, it means that there's availability, and that means that the real estate to get downtown is going to be cheaper. So yeah, I expect this will be more and more, you know, barring another COVID surge or the triple-demic that they're saying we're all going to have this winter. I think you're going to see more of, you know, consumer traffic back into the cities, and you go where the people are, restaurants are going to follow.
Well, and Sweetgreen mentioned it on their earnings call that was just 2 days ago. They mentioned that that they are starting catering, and that they are seeing these large catering orders. And I mean, that's a lot of office people who are asking for catering orders, and that they're opening up more outposts, and outposts are all in city centers, and you know, that they're seeing this return to urbanization. And they were one of the big people, just like Shake Shack, who went right out to the suburbs when this struck, and that, you know, they're opening up their, but then they came back and they're opening up these delivery, these digital only units, and they're coming right back into the city. And so I think it's interesting to watch the flow of how people are moving and coming back and moving and coming back in a way that I didn't think that, you know, I didn't think that people would come back so soon. I think that I thought that people would stay away for a little bit longer and kind of let the people who stayed in the city exist in our own little bubble for a while before they came rushing back.
Surprise. Yeah, I mean, sorry. I mean, again, I think some of it is just like, you know, we've been back to life as normal for many months now. And, you know, that plus stir crazy equals, well, hey, what, like, let's go back to the office. Now, I think catering is an interesting point, though, Holly, because I think once you start seeing catering really come back to full form, then you are, that, I mean, I think that's a telltale sign that cities are back, especially because in a hybrid work environment, our office in particular, it's very rarely full. Because in a hybrid environment, people kind of just pick whatever days they come in. And so there's not one day when everybody seems to be there, which is when catering really is going to capitalize, because catering is going to, you know, when you have volume in the office and you get a large catering order, that's, you know, that's more so the experience for catering. I think some offices probably are trying to coordinate. I've talked to a lot of people who say, yeah, we ask everybody to come in, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or something along those lines. But that's when, you know, I think cities are really back when those catering orders are fulfilled. Now, I just to touch really quickly on the suburbs, I mean, I think the opportunity is still there in the suburbs, right? This is not to say that, oh, now that everybody ran back to the cities, that means the suburban growth isn't what it used to be. I think suburbs are probably just as hot as they were before, because A, with hybridization of working, suburbs are way more busy and ripe with potential than they were in a pre-COVID environment when people went to work 5 days a week. Now the suburbs, if you have 1 or 2 days a week when people are around, I mean, the co-working space I go to is in a suburb. I mean, it's in a mall, for crying out loud, you know? So it's like across from me where I sit in my co-working space is a Cheesecake Factory. So it's like that kind of a spot, which no, I have not been eating at. It's just nothing against you, Cheesecake Factory, is just
there's
to say that.
Every day.
Yeah, I could do lunch every day for a whole year and not get the same thing. Anyway, my point that I'm making here is that suburbs continue to be, you know, a real potential too, because I do think as hybridization becomes the norm, you're going to see people equally working in suburbs as they are in urban areas. And that means that both areas have a lot of opportunity for restaurants to serve customers.
Well, you guys, we did it. We finished another episode.
Good job, us.
Good job, us.
Yay.
I hope you guys liked today's episode. We liked filming it for you. So thank
Speak
you
for
guys
yourself.
So much. For-
Forced me to do this.
Bold claims.
I've got work to do. I could be working right
just
now.
Just shows up on my calendar every week, and here I come.
I'm going to speak for you guys, and I'm going to say we all enjoyed doing this today. You guys have brightened my day.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
So thank you guys for joining me, and I'm going to throw it over to Ron Ruggles for his Drinked In live recording.
This was
not live.
You guys
can see this.
This one was not live.
You guys can see this live. No.
Well, it was live when people are listening to us currently.
I was going to explain it.
Okay, well, I was helping. I came for the assist. Jeez.
And you did a great job, Sam.
Thank you.
These are LinkedIn Live sessions with Ron Ruggles, our senior editor, where he creates a drink with somebody from the industry, and they discuss life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Or, you know, restaurant stuff.
Or, you know, restaurant stuff.
That one.
We're going to play you guys an episode of that. So that was this week's episode that was filmed on Thursday, November 10th.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Snovo. Welcome to Snovo and Austin Hohai from Snowbird Cocktail Lounge and Kitchen in Frisco, Texas. Yes, Snow sir. And Austin, just introduce yourself and tell us, why don't you go second, Austin? Tell us what drink you'll be making.
Go ahead, Austin.
You go ahead. I'm second.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Snowbo, and I am with Snowbird's Cocktail Lounge and Kitchen in Frisco, Texas. I am the conceptual creator behind the whole concept and the design of the place, and we are very, very excited to be here with Ron Ruggles today to share any of our insight and thoughts and ideas, and just we're just glad to be here.
And Austin, feel free to introduce yourself and tell us what cocktail you'll be making.
My name's Austin Hoyai. I'm going to be the bar manager here over at Snowbird Cocktail Lounge in the Star. Today, we're going to make one of our cocktails called the Melon Outs. It's going to be a cantaloupe thyme, reduction, a little lemon, vodka base, a little splash of elderflower. Look forward to kind of bring all those light, herbal, fruity flavors together to make a really balanced cocktail. So the way I like to start it off, get my glassware ready. Because this cocktail is going to have egg, we're going to use an egg white. You definitely don't want the yolk. The yolk's not going to be very good in a egg white cocktail unless you're making like a Baltimore Nog or something like that. So we're going to throw that away. We're going to grab our Grey Goose, and we're going to pour about 2 ounces. And a little bit of our St. Elder, elderflower liqueur, a very balanced floral liqueur. Some lemon juice. And then our cantaloupe thyme reduction that we make in-house.
And how do you make the reduction, Austin?
The last ingredient is going to be it's a thyme liqueur that we use. We have to use it in a dropper because it's very, very powerful. So just one little squeeze is all that thyme flavor we need. Otherwise, it's going to be way too strong. Combine all those flavors ready. And I'm just going to whip it up, help aerate that cocktail to get that really good balance. So it's going to give me a second here to kind of get everything flowing.
This is looks like a good workout.
And I like to say, remember when all those commercials for like the shake weight and all that stuff were out? I was like, who needs a shake weight? You just shake a few tins and you're ready to go. Ready for that summer weather. We're going to add our ice now to help chill the cocktail and help balance everything so everything's not too strong. And I give it a nice hard shake.
As you can see, Ron, all of our bartenders have to be in really good shape.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the good shape. You got to make sure you have that good dilution as well as the froth. The
Snowbird
froth really makes the balance.
Snowbird has the buff bartenders up in Frisco, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to double strain this because we are serving this cocktail up as well as an egg white cocktail. You don't want any chips, any like, you know, bigger chunks at all. It should be all silky, smooth, creamy. Give a nice shake, get all that nice froth. And then what I like to do is we need to torch the top of our egg. Helps pop any big air bubbles and just compacts it to a very smooth texture. Once that's set, we're gonna take our Peychaud bitters, add a very beautiful floral note as well as like an artsy design on top. So it really adds to that presentation. Get a little pick, you can get artsy with it. We do a very simple, nice swoop. Sure it's good. And then we'll garnish it with the fresh melon balls that we use to make our cantaloupe thyme reduction. Just get it all nice and set.
Oh. That's beautiful, Austin.
See if we can get you guys go ahead and see it. Tilt down the cameras a tad bit. That's a little bright.
A little bright.
Yeah, that'll be our cantaloupe melon out cocktail.
That is perfect, Austin. Thank you very much. I am pulling from your Buzz Lightyear on your menu.
Yeah.
Because I stole a Buzz Bud, one of the Szechuan blossoms, I'm just having a gin and tonic, and I will try this later.
Yeah, perfect. Snow, I mean, nothing more classic than a quick gin and tonic, that's for sure.
Snow, tell us a little bit about the idea or the concept behind Snowbird.
So the whole concept behind Snowbird was to try to build out a place where individuals could come not only to have drinks, but also to have dinner as well. We find ourselves in an area where you're either going to have dinner or you're going to a bar to have drinks, but there wasn't really a place that had the combined effect where a person can sit, have dinner, and just move on into a lounge area if they wanted to continue and have deeper conversations with friends or just, you know, more drinks throughout the night. And we found that in the city of Frisco, there really wasn't something to that effect for the entire, well, in the entire area, so to speak. So we came up with a concept where it was essentially a cocktail lounge, but we were also going to serve food as well.
And when you went out to find the chef to do Snowbird, what were you looking for? What do you have in mind for the food?
Okay, so in all honesty and truthfully, we had a lot of help. There was no possible way that we could have done this by ourselves. And I believe that in any industry, any smart business person, they will surround themselves with people who are experts in their area. So we had an expert in the hospitality industry, the Entourage Group, three gentlemen who helped us find our chefs and help us establish the menus and the concepts and the ideas and just really guided us in building out what Snowbird is today. So we leaned heavily on them, and it was a huge collaboration, lots of ideas throwing back and forth. And ultimately, we came upon Chef Walter, who has a very international background, which really excited us as well, because he brought to the area something a little bit more unique than the typical American or Italian or Mediterranean Greek. He had a lot of Latin, Peruvian. He traveled a lot and a lot of Asian visits as well. So just his combination of all the different flavors and the different cultures that he lived in really excited us and thought that it would be a great addition to the Frisco area to have someone of his caliber.
One of the items I had when I visited right as you were opening was the calamari kimchi, which I believe you created. Austin, I'm going to come to you with a question about what cocktail goes with that. But beyond California kimchi, are there items on the menu that have been especially popular, Snow, that you really liked?
The pork belly is a very popular item as well as the octopus, where Chef cooks it very differently from anywhere that I ever tried. He actually flash fries it versus batters it or grills it. So it's a very different texture, very different, unique flavor as well. When we first tried that and was first introduced to that, we immediately was drawn to that. And we absolutely needed it on our menu. So it was a flash fry octopus. And he keeps it, he keeps the entire tail whole, where it's not sliced up, it's not tossed, it's just perfect.
And Austin, you recommended the Buzz Lightyear cocktail, which I have my Buzz Bud here, to go with the calamari kimchi. Why do you think the Buzz Lightyear goes especially well with the calamari?
Because with the calamari, it has, kimchi calamari is one of my personal favorites. It has a beautiful combination of zest, spice, the crunch. And especially since we fry that calamari, it has like that right balance of like oil coated over it. So it has like a nice buttery richness to it that really makes everything go down smoothly. And with the Buzz Lightyear, since it has just a beautiful combination of citrus notes from the artisan gin, the lemon juice, the hint of chocolate, and the lay to help balance the rich like compound of the calamari, I think it's a really good combination together.
And are you still serving the Buzz Lightyear with the Buzz Bud?
Almost definitely. I could never get rid of it.
for those wanting to know what a Buzz Bud is, it's a little Szechuan flower that changes the flavor profile of everything you drink or eat afterwards. I thought it was a great combination. So my hats off to you all for doing that.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. One other thing that the audience should know about that, it actually numbs your tongue. And then once that numbness is gone, that's when the different flavor explosion comes into your mouth from the drink. So that was like one of the key things that we wanted audiences or our guests to know, that when they were drinking it, don't be shocked because they won't feel their tongue for a little bit. But what they do is just an explosion of flavor from the drink.
But I think you feel all of your other body parts. So
yeah, it's just your tongue. That's just
your tongue. Just the tongue.
Both of you, a question starting with you, Snow. How has the pandemic changed, in your mind, how people consume cocktails and food?
I think now more so than ever, there is actually an increase in people wanting to come out, wanting to just be out there and live their life. In Texas alone, I'm not sure about other states, but in Texas, there's just a huge, huge support for a lot of the businesses here because people understand that the bar industry was hard hit, especially here in Texas, where we had to completely shut down if there was no food being served. So restaurants were able to be open at 50%. But if you were a straight bar cocktail lounge serving absolutely no food, there was a requirement that it had to be completely shut down. So now that the pandemic is over, I see a big, big support system where everyone is wanting to come out, is wanting to support all the businesses because they did have to struggle for so long. And the ones that did survive, they had to get really, really savvy to do so.
And Austin, from your perspective, did you notice any change in how people were consuming cocktails or flavors that they were going for?
Yes. So I started bartending right after COVID started to like loosen up a little bit. So I was kind of in this forefront of like pandemic just took over everything. And I started learning bartending from mentors of mine that taught me the infusion of different flavors, the cooking processes, combining so many different notes. And it's something that people started to learn during the pandemic. A lot more people stayed home cooking and stuff like that. They started knowing what's in their ingredients. What are they buying? How is this produced? Certain flavor profiles. And since the pandemic has like starting to come to an end, hopefully, everyone's starting to see, hey, like I know what quality is. I know what's in this. I want to know what I'm drinking, what makes it this way. So everyone's a lot more in tune to like what they're drinking. It's a lot less dive bars just going down for some drink that got put together. Now it's like all these reductions and syrups and the layers of flavor that comes with a quality cocktail. And it's all about like the backstock and the prep for it. And people, they notice that. They can taste the quality and the freshness that comes with the products that quality places present, instead of before the pandemic where it was kind of like iffy.
Snow, what about the location you went into was attractive from your business perspective?
So the Star is actually a very attractive location, so to speak. I mean, it is Jerry Jones World. You can't go wrong with Jerry Jones World. And there was just a huge need for more restaurants in that area. So the city of Frisco alone and the surrounding cities, they're growing so, so fast. Honestly, the entertainment district cannot keep up with the number of residents that are moving in there. So I believe that the more restaurants, more businesses that can come to the area to support the residents, that that'll be even greater for the overall city itself. But the Star in general, we have great partners, great neighbors. We're surrounded by great businesses. They're all here to support each other. And we're all rooting for each other to survive.
Well, interesting thing about the Star for the listeners or viewers who aren't familiar, it's the Dallas Cowboys practice facility, which Jerry Jones owns. And it's very near the Toyota headquarters as well, the new where they moved from California.
Yeah.
What kind of bar customers are you getting there, Austin? What type of clientele?
So the rough clientele that we get here at Snowbird it's going to be kind of like a mixture of kind of like the hip as well as in like older crowd. It's a very good balance of everything. So we get a lot of different perspectives coming in. But I would say overall with our guests that we have in, they all know what quality is. They all know like what they're eating, the freshness to things. And that's what we here do at Snowbird is present quality. It's from the freshness from the fish that comes in to our reductions and the consistencies that are kept with it. That's what the people that come here want. That's what the people at Frisco have. There's a lot of like money and a lot of great people and businesses, but we need to, you know, make sure that we're showing them quality for the service that we're presenting.
Yeah, Ron, the big thing about the craft cocktails at Snowbird is that all the ingredients are all made in-house, where the reductions are made in-house. They're very keen on, you know, natural fruits, ingredients. They're shopping for the freshest vegetables. So it's not like they're just pouring some lime juice out of a can. It's everything is organic. Everything is fresh. And that's one of the key things that you'll notice when a person is drinking the craft cocktails. A lot of heart and thought is put into these drinks so that a person can actually consume something considered a craft cocktail versus a regular drink at a bar. And people do notice the difference in the taste.
Snow, you were very impactful on the design and were behind a lot of the design decisions, if not creatively behind the design. What do you think people are looking for in today's market as far as cocktail places as well as dining rooms?
I feel like a lot of people are wanting to go to some place that is not their living room, so to speak. Just a lot of people have been trapped in their home for so long. A lot of people actually work remotely from home these days. So for them to get out, go into an area where it's completely different. There's just a different atmosphere, a different feel, a different vibe. That is what people are looking for. They're wanting a different surrounding, so to speak. And my whole thought idea behind Snowbird is just vibrancy, lushness, comfort, fun. I wanted to try to bring all those aspects to our guests so that when they do come, they want to stay. They feel like they're, you know, they're in a very comfortable place where they're welcome and they're not rushed, and that they're filled with all these vibrant colors so that it's not a boring sense that they're in. It did morph into what it is now. I mean, we did work on this project for a good year, but I believe we're in a good place right now.
Well, you have connections to Tipsy Alchemy, right? Or Alchemist?
So my other half, yes, David. He owns and operates the Tipsy Alchemist located in Austin, Texas. And their counterpart is the original Tipsy Alchemist located in Dallas, Texas.
And does that offer as much food as you offer at Snowbird?
No food at all, sir.
Do you think the combination is especially good for this market?
Yes, absolutely. I feel that whenever a person is drinking, there should be a balance, similar to how Austin was explaining the balance of flavors from his drink for the kimchi calamari. I feel that every food, there should be some time of a cocktail to balance it out. Person doesn't have to be drinking for 4 hours straight without putting some kind of food into their stomach. That might not be a good idea.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, when we did start off as a cocktail lounge, however, in the city of Frisco, there is a requirement, Ron, that we have to serve food. It has to be 50-50 in Frisco.
So it was part of it was the legal requirement.
Yes.
The well, legal requirement. That's good because I love that kimchi. Austin, have you noticed a change in how the cocktail consumer is approaching drinks since we're coming out of the pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, personally, before the pandemic, I've been working in bars since I was 12 years old, and working with my dad who has ran bars, like overall guests have kept to a certain set of consistencies. They didn't really branch out to too many cocktails, but after the pandemic hit, like Last Words, Manhattans, White Negronis, like all these classics having their own twists, different flavor profiles to them. Everyone's starting to experiment and find their unique flavor with their cocktails. There's just like a whole range of knowledge that us as bartenders need to absorb to be able to present the guests the best quality that they're looking for. They're looking for a certain flavor profile, and we need to present that for them.
Austin, I'm going to ask this question of you, and then we'll turn it back to Snow as well. But okay, when you're going out to have a drink or dine, what type of places do you like to go to?
So for me personally, it revolves around my dad. My dad never told me to go to a dive bar or anything where the floors aren't clean or the glassware isn't polished. So I usually like to go to craft cocktail lounges and stuff like that, where just, you know, quality ingredients. Like my favorite all-time cocktail is an Illegal New York Sour. It's a Mezcal New York Sour. You can't get that at a whole lot of places. You need to go to like a craft cocktail lounge where they know, you know, flavor profiles and the balance of things. That's where usually I like to dine and enjoy myself.
And Snow, what type of places do you find yourself going to, and has it changed because of the 2-year pandemic?
I actually love going to the more smaller, intimate restaurants where they're always changing out their menus based on the season. The Charles is actually one of my favorite. It's down located in the Bishop Arts area where the menu does evolve with the season. But I also absolutely love Italian. Lombardi's is actually one of my favorites up at the Star as well. And, you know, you can't go wrong with a good steak. D. Lincoln's right there in the Star. So like I said, the Star has many wonderful restaurants, and everyone just ensures that there's different types of flavors in the area. So you can actually hop from one restaurant to another and you're always exposed to different types of dishes.
Speaking of types of dishes, Snowbird is very, as you said, based on Latin American, Asian flavors. Is there a food category that you're finding especially popular now?
No, I feel that everybody is very open to trying different types of foods all across the board, regardless of nationality or background. I feel that there's a lot more people open to just exposing themselves to different flavors. Like you and I, we absolutely love this kimchi calamari, but it's not, there are folks who just can't take that kimchi vinegar flavor. I mean, we've had guests who are like, oh, what is this? So it is not for everybody, but I feel like we have a good mix on our menu and people do want to try the different flavor aspects of everything, regardless of what restaurant you're at. So everyone is open to that these days.
And Austin, for you, I keep reading about mocktails becoming more popular or non-alcoholic alternatives. Are you finding guests asking for that sort of thing?
Yeah, so like I would say the most common situation is usually there's a group of ladies going out for like ladies' night. They're all having a good time, but one of them's pregnant and stuff like that. Now, you don't want to give them like, you know, a glass of lemonade while all their friends are drinking these beautiful presented cocktails and stuff like that. So it's all about just, you know, I can take this melon out, for example, just don't put in the vodka, add a little extra citrus and a little water and still garnish it a very similar way and still make it beautiful for them and still make a unique experience. And like mocktails are just so popular for those for medical conditions, pregnancies, or, you know, underage. If that's like one of the things that happened, no guest should not have a beautiful drink in their hands.
Come on, yeah. It's more like having a beautiful plate in front of you as well as it's a drink.
Ron, when sometimes I go out to restaurants with my daughter and we're drinking cocktails, she also wants a pretty glass as well. So we'll ask our server, can she have like, you know, a martini glass, but fill it with milk or juice or something. They just want the experience. They just want to be part of it. So yeah, absolutely. Mocktails are a huge, huge, huge thing for folks who just can't drink that alcohol portion of it.
This is a question both for you, Snow and Austin. In this macroeconomic environment, where there is, I guess, on the edges, there's concern about inflation and everything. What benefits does an independent have in this market?
An independent business owner in this market during this really crazy economic world that we're living in. I don't know if it's an opportunity, Ron, but we just all have to use our smarts to make sure we navigate through the world that we're living in and ride the highs and the lows, and just have to be on our toes in order to understand where the market's going to drive us. I don't think anybody can be fully prepared, but we all do our best. And the best thing is that we have a community of people who don't want to see any businesses fail. So the community itself is always out to support all the businesses. And that's the most positive thing that I can think about.
Who do you rely on for business advice?
David.
And please explain. My other half.
we also rely heavily, like I said, we surround ourselves with experts. Our hospitality consulting group is entourage, three very smart, sharp gentlemen. We rely heavily on them. They're great friends, great partners, great consultants. But they are in the industry. David's in the industry. Their background is seeped in the industry. So they foresee a lot of things. And they do try to navigate through that as quickly as possible.
I think we should introduce the person that just came in and kissed you on the shoulder.
My daughter, she ran off. The daughter who likes to be part of every single drink and cocktail. Yes.
That leads me to a question for you, Austin. For younger people, what type of drinks do you prepare for them? Or what do you find that they might be interested in?
Are those younger as in over the age of 21, correct?
Yeah. No, I actually I'm talking about if somebody comes in with children, for example, what kind of things do you offer?
So personally, especially when someone comes with children, I personally ask the children, is like, what would you like? Like, you know, do you like blackberries? Do you like strawberries? Like, I can make you like I'm from Hawaii, so like, virgin pina coladas, fruity, pineapple, coconuts, any way to make it fun and interactive for them and stuff like that, for like, you know, just making it special, making it unique, making sure not only the parents have a good time, but the kids are also happy and having a good time as well. Like, you shouldn't discard the kids, you know, make it special, you know, make sure they have a good time and a good experience. And that makes sure the parents are happy, because as long as the kids are smiling and happy, parents are happy.
Austin, you mentioned interactive, and that's something that Snowbird really does a lot of, is interactive type cocktails. I noticed you have nitrogen freezed raspberries.
Mm, yes, we use liquid nitrogen. Yeah.
I guess the theater of cocktails, how important is that right now?
I mean, honestly, like, the show is everything. Like, when the bar is, like, if you have, like, a full bar top, there's the energy's not very high, just dinging some tins together, shaking it out, flipping something, taking the liquid nitrogen and just, like, let it smoke and fall. It's everything. It adds to the anticipation for the drink that's being presented. It's like when, you know, when you go to the hibachi place and the guy cooks up everything with spatulas, you're like so in tune to what he's doing, and like your like hunger or thirst for what is about to come is like building. It's the same thing with the cocktails that you hear. It's the show that we present creates anticipation and excitement for it.
Okay, you both just mentioned a word, and I'd like you to follow up on this, Snow. Anticipation. How important is that in the dining cocktail experience right now?
I feel it's everything, Ron. I mean, you go to a place because you want an experience. You want to be entertained. You're bored at home. You wanted a different scenery. It's that anticipation of, what am I going to experience tonight? So entering Snowbird, not only the first anticipation is just entering an area that's completely Art Deco. The whole ambience, the whole vibe has a very chill and relaxed being to it. But just the drinks alone is a completely different show in itself. I also want to just kind of piggyback off of that. There's actually a cocktail series now on Netflix where a lot of people are actually competing. So I found that to be just absolutely amazing, because in this day and age, there's so many cooking shows and drink shows, bartending shows, there's all kinds of shows that they're showcasing what really is out there, like the talent and all the work that goes behind making a dish or making a drink. So I found that to be very exciting when I saw a cocktail series on Netflix right now. But it's all about that show. It's all about the exhilaration of what you're about to see, what you're about to experience.
It's Drink Masters, is that what it's called?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting tips for things to watch on Netflix after the crown.
I mean, it's purely an art. Every single craft cocktail, it really is an art. For individuals to have to think of the different types of fruits or vegetables just to do a reduction and how that reduction cooks. It's amazing how all that comes together to create an artistic drink.
It really is an art now, Austin. How do you see yourself fitting into the culinary art of bartending?
Oh, I feel like it goes hand in hand. When I started out, like, I was barbacking for 4 months for this place called Paradiso down in Bishop Arts. The beverage director had me in the kitchen 9 hours a day, making all these syrups, reductions, the processes of straining with like grease strainers and double filters, cooking giant batches of like wine with liqueur, chilies, like clove, just like all these different spices and herbs going in to make such a unique thing. And I was like, this is cooking. I'm basically cooking, but yeah, it's meant for cocktails. And it's just hand in hand. Cooking and drinking is the same thing. It's all about, you know, creating something unique, special, and, you know, thinking outside the box, being creative. You can have fun with this.
Snow, I hear you audibly nodding. How do you think the culinary part of cocktails fits into Snowbird?
Like we were talking about earlier, food and drinks go hand in hand. You honestly shouldn't have one without the other. It's such a great pairing. It's a balance. It's a balance of flavors. It's a balance of what excites your tongue and your stomach. And I believe that every ingredient that can be utilized in the kitchen, well, not every ingredient, but there is a good amount of ingredients that are used in the kitchen that can also be used behind the bar as well. So the partnership and the collaboration of these two pieces, well, these two articles are a great, great mix for any type of business that are serving cocktails and food.
What do you see as the foreseeable hurdles? And I'm going to ask this of Austin from what he's hearing from people he's serving, because bartenders always know the windows to your soul. And Snow, you first, what are the foreseeable hurdles and how are you preparing for those?
I noticed that in the Dallas market, for any business to survive, it is a struggle. Businesses go for a good 3 to 5 years and then the excitement dies down, that, you know, that exhilaration is no longer there. And people here are always looking for what's the next new thing. So I feel that in order to stay alive in this business, you're constantly having to reinvent yourself. You can't just go in year one and you're an Art Deco restaurant serving these delicious craft cocktails and menu. You have to continue to reinvent, find out what the audience wants, find out what the city is doing. It's a whole entire collaboration and research. A lot of research goes into what the people wants and need and what's the hottest thing out there. So I feel like we are constantly having to reinvent ourselves so that there's something new for everyone all the time.
How many seats at Snowbird? I forgot to ask.
I'm sorry, my daughter just walked over and gave me homework. I'm sorry, it was a distraction. I was like, why are you giving me homework right now? Not that, baby.
It's multitasking. So the question was, how many seats at Snowbird?
Oh my gosh, how many seats? We just added a few more seats. I honestly don't know off the top of my head. Austin, do you know? I'm counting.
I don't know. I'm kind of counting the seats at the moment. I was like, I'm actually not sure. I would say close to around 200.
No, not seats.
200 seats. I mean, we can fit 200 people.
Our capacity is 165, Ron. Our capacity is 165.
165, great. And Austin, the same question for you, but from what you're hearing from people you're serving, what are hurdles that they're seeing in their personal lives or economically on the horizon?
I mean, just overall, like observing people from the other side, a lot of things I hear as a consistent thing is like inflation, economics, things are hard and stuff like that. And it's getting, a little out of hand these days and stuff like that. But I think the best thing we can do as bartenders is just make sure we're here for them. We're here to listen to our guests, give them a good time, give them an escape from just like all the hardships and the difficulties that we all have to suffer, outside of here or in our daily lives and routines. I feel like, going out to the bar is that way to de-stress yourself, go back at it the next day and reevaluate with a better plan. I think it's very important for that personally.
It really is. Yeah.
And, really, and I think all bartenders should get paid higher because I use them as therapists. So,
we're bartenders, but it's like AKA/therapist, AKA we know a guy, and so on and so on.
Snow, what do you find most exciting about the cocktail lounge segment right now?
The most exciting thing about a cocktail lounge segment, I feel that just the ambience alone of being in a cocktail lounge versus a restaurant or a bar. I like that medium where I can just go and just relax and be able to just sit back in a very comfortable chair and just have a cocktail drink and for hours on end versus having to sit at a dining table or a bar top. The cocktail lounge in itself is just that median where folks can go to just to get away. And like Austin said, it really is like a de-stressor for folks who have worked corporate all day and just need an out. It's a great place to be.
Yeah.
And what on the menu, what's your favorite combination on the menu?
The kimchi calamari.
Oh, you have such
and
good
the raspberry day. Beret. I absolutely love the raspberry beret and the espresso no depresso.
Okay. Austin, can you tell us what is in a raspberry beret?
What's in a raspberry beret?
Yeah.
So for a raspberry beret, we start off with a little bit of liquid nitrogen raspberries. That's going to be our garnish. Set for later. We're going to freeze that ahead of time. We're going to throw in a little orgeat, throw in an egg white to have that nice like neutral balance on top of the cocktail. We muddle in some raspberries, a little bit of lemon juice, some vodka, and some raspberry liqueur to really bring out that raspberry flavor. Nice dry shake, wet shake, and set into a beautiful glass. Little Peychaud's for a little color and fragrance. And you just dash on that ice cold freezing liquid nitrogen raspberries as that show. So when the cocktail is presented to you, it just pours over the glass with that as like a presentation.
And I think everybody should be aware the raspberry actually kind of dismantles when it gets frozen. It is little beads of flavor, which are really amazing.
Yeah, like little pearls, little frozen pearls resting on top of your glass.
Yeah, it's pops of flavor. It's delicious. Yeah.
And Austin, what is exciting about the segment? You said you've been in it since the age of 15, and I'm sure you weren't serving drinks at 15. But
oh no, what? I've been in this industry since I was 12 years old. I started dishwashing 12 hours a day, to busing, to bar backing, to serving, bartending. I've worked myself slowly but surely all the way up, and mainly purely because of my dad, because legally I would not have been able to work in any of these places without my dad. But he's been a very good mentor for me. Definitely did not give me any easy routes, no quick step to get through things. It's like on your hands and knees, scrubbing the drains with a toothbrush. After that, take out all the trash. I mean, there was no light work working for him, but he definitely created a very good work ethic that's gonna, I think, push me through this industry. Because I think nothing can get you anywhere, and rather than the work that it'll take to get it.
And what's kept you in the hospitality industry?
Sorry?
What has kept you in the hospitality industry?
This is gonna be a little petty, but it was an argument me and my dad had back in the day. Something about, everyone was saying my dad was so great and so high up. It is an area I would never be able to surpass. And I was like, okay, game on. Like, I mean, all right, you wanna play like that? Let's do it. I was like, all right, I'm gonna get into bartending, bar back for 3 months, crushed bar backing. All right, on to bartending. Let's bust out some craft cocktails. Awesome. Now I'm bar managing, so now getting more hands-on with, you know, being in front of people, shaking hands, socializing, and then hopefully within a few years I have my own spot. That's the goal that I have set for myself.
Well, it's good to know that you're staying in it for revenge.
I mean, we're all good, you know.
Everyone needs a goal in life.
Yeah.
His goal is revenge.
Yeah, it's like revenge, but I ended up secretly enjoying what I do.
That is pretty awesome, Ron. Flavors. That is awesome.
Snow, we have two more minutes. Snow, we have now one more minute because we like to keep these to 45 minutes. But what is, at this point, what are you most excited looking forward in the next 2 to 5 years for Snowbird or the hospitality business in general?
The hospitality business in general. I'm just very excited that everybody's back open at 100%. I'm very excited that everyone is able to implement all kinds of new ideas and concepts. And that the main thing is that there is a huge support system to support all these business owners with their new ideas. So that is what I'm most excited about, that everybody should go out there, should try their concepts, should push for greatness or revenge. So awesome. But it's out there for everybody. And, you know, we're all rooting for every business to survive.
Yeah, everyone's got their thing.
Yeah.
Well, Austin Hawaii and Snow Vo, I thank you both for your time today. Holly in our New York office, I thank you for sitting on the call, and great days ahead for Snowbird as well as that calamari kimchi.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us, Ron.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Snow. Thank you, Austin.
It's my pleasure.